Hey guys, welcome to the Shack. This is episode 31.
Correct.
I did good. Mikey, I'm glad to be here.
Yes, we are very excited to be here. This is a live in-person episode with a studio audience for the first time. Studio. We are recording outside.
Yeah,
this is quite interesting for us. And we have not the usual band of characters with us.
No, all the guys are at the shop making knives. Mike dragged me all the way to Georgia where it's warm. Not really.
It's supposed to snow later this year.
Not all the way warm, but we are down here with a bunch of our friends at Georgia Bushcraft.
Yes. For demo days, for which demo is a very exciting event.
Yep. And we thought we would bring you a really cool podcast tonight. But first, Mike, where can they find the podcast?
Well, easy. Everywhere you can find podcasts.
So the internet, then?
That's it. They can get them on the website, all over the place, right?
Yes. Pretty much anywhere you can find podcasts. Apple, Amazon, Pandora, you name it, we're on it.
So we have, I don't know if you guys listen to the podcast or not, but if you don't, let me bring you up to date. We have been number one maybe once. Somewhere. Was that Belize?
Portugal.
We're on the charts in Portugal, the Netherlands, and Belgium right now.
No way. Good job, guys.
I'm almost nervous just hearing that.
It's super exciting. So I always want to give a shout out to those guys that make us number one across the world. So thank you for being here. Today, we're going to talk to all our friends here. But first, let's get them introduced. I'm LT with LT Wright Knives.
Shane with SE Knives and Reynolds Adventure and Training.
And you got JJ with Fuel the Fires.
You got Brandon Curran with Battle Box.
Casey Deming with Georgia Bushcraft.
Brian from Woods Monkey.
Heather Salisbury, P&W Bushcraft.
And Todd Salisbury from P&W Bushcraft.
And I'm Mikey, trying to drive this ship.
You're doing good, baby. We ain't hit nothing yet.
Hey, we got through the announcements and everybody said something
We did a real good job.
Nobody slammed the table or anything. It's great.
So Mikey's idea, guys, is he wants to talk about unpopular... what was that again?
Unpopular opinions in bushcraft. Because I know everybody here has one. And I know that a lot of the guests that we're going to have one. And I just want to get them out there, and I want to have an open discussion about it. Hopefully we can dispel some of those rumors and unpopular opinions.
Because there is a lot of stuff that gets done that maybe shouldn't get done.
Yes, and there are a lot of things that people have opinions on that don't really matter, in my opinion.
Like, but it should be
fine. You can tell the difference between a 5/32 and an 1/8 inch knife when you're just using it. That's just me.
Wow.
Wow.
Sounds like you just got an email
right on that one.
Wow.
Bang, bang. There it is.
Pump the brakes. But before we even dive into this, though, like, I have a question for the panel here, because I see most of y'all are in my age group or whatever. The term bushcraft itself, like before we even get started, I would say 10 years ago, that wasn't even, maybe 20 years ago, that wasn't even a thing, right? Like if you had asked me if I was a bushcrafter, I would have said,
what's that?
What is
that?
Right, y'all agree with me on that or whatever? I would have associated that with something like down in Australia or something like that to begin with. So you know, I guess my opening statement here is I think the term itself might be BS to begin with.
I feel like
we have a need to like file all of us in these neat little folders.
Sure.
And I think the term bushcraft, which isn't that copyrighted now?
Yes, it is.
Or trademarked to begin with. Do we have the... give royalties to somebody for using this
we'll
term?
We'll probably get sued, but
maybe we have to pay Casey.
As long as it doesn't have to do the coffee or honey, we're good to go.
Well, I know as a kid we used to call it camping.
Camping. Yeah. You know, you were an outdoorsman, right? And you were a hunter, whatever.
I think my dad had a book laying around called Woodcraft.
Woodcraft.
So that's kind of what I remember. I remember the first time I did hear the term bushcraft, I was making hunting knives, and I was a hunting knife maker at the time. And then someone said, can you make a bushcraft knife? And I remember saying, sure.
What is it? Well, you know, honestly, back in the day, I was using y'all's knives that I was modifying into this new thing, bushcraft or whatever, to try to make myself a bushcraft knife back then. Yeah. So to me, I still think it's kind of a newer thing. But you're talking about unpopular opinions in modern day bushcraft, as we use the term now.
And in the loose term, and for the idea of it being something that we all participate in. We may not agree on what the true definition of bushcraft is, but we all are in that realm.
And we understand
and we get through the concept. And the idea is that I know every one of us here has something that we just infuriates us. You know, you get the email, you get the comment on a video, and you're like, really, really, that's what you came away with that on this particular learning process.
So an example of that would be like, say, using the blade to actually scrape the ferro rod or something, yep, rather than a spine, maybe.
Right. But again, not all knives have sharpened spines, so correct, sometimes that's the only option. And yes, it is something that works, and it's something you should know that it does, but is it the best thing? Probably not.
I think this is going to be a blast. Yeah,
let's get going. You know what? There were some opinions when I first started working out bushcraft knives, I guess, and you do that, and I've had my opinions changed by some people that really can use a knife very, very well, and they're like, hey, that's a really cool thing, and you adopt it yourself. So, man, this whole journey has been great because over the years I've been able to learn a lot of stuff, you know, coming into it, and then you just apply it to what you're doing and working with your guys and stuff. That's been a lot of fun.
Well, I think that's important anyway, right? Having that forever student mentality and constantly learning and changing and growing.
Absolutely.
Okay.
So, what would you say constitutes a bushcraft knife, guys? I mean, straight up.
Whatever knife I have in my pocket when I'm doing bushcraft
there
stuff.
There you go.
Excellent answer.
The same goes for survival knife or fighting knife or
firearms.
Whatever I have with me.
Sharpened rock. We need somebody at the table that would be the exact opposite of that, right? Like a cowie. Like, no, a bushcraft knife has to be, what, 4 inches or what? Y'all are knife makers, so what is...
The 4 to 5 inch, you know,
there is a sweet spot.
A sweet spot there for bushcraft knives.
Now, remember, that sweet spot's defined by the end user, in all fairness.
Right.
Because the majority of the people are wanting that
profile
size. And that could be based on old books they read, too. You know, there's a lot of things that may turn them, or the guys that they're camping with. You know, his buddy's got an SE3. You know, that's the size that all of a sudden is for him. That's the Holy Grail size. That's the Holy Grail knife. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's a great way. I mean, a lot of the cool things that I have was because that's what my dad carried. I was a buck knife guy, man, early on. That's all I ever had.
Amen. Me too.
Yeah. What my dad had, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, if back then, though, I would have thought a bushcraft knife would have been something more along the lines of a larger knife. Maybe a kukri or a ring, a machete of some sort.
We've seen the evolution of bushcraft knives in our journey.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
You know, it started out with a 3/16 sharpened pry bar, one tool option thing, and now we've kind of turn full circle and we're back to smaller thin
knives.
Finish style pukos and
now is that all they're using, though? Is that their one tool option
you
or
see
answer?
A lot of that you see a lot of that augmenting an axe or a saw. You see that there's all kinds of realms where people are doing different things. There are still the people that want that one tool option, but there are other people that are realizing that bushcraft requires a tool kit, not just a knife or this or that. And I mean, it's just an evolution. I think as people's skills get better and as they've delved deeper into the history, you see a lot more of people either diving deeper into the European-style bushcraft knives or into the long hunter-style knives.
Yeah.
And that's where I think a lot of the market has changed dramatically is people's education levels have gotten better.
Oh, absolutely. I agree with Mikey. When we were doing the 3/16 pry bar-style bush knife, as 20 years ago, you know, as things are starting to progress and YouTube is, there's a lot of great knowledge on YouTube and people going to classes and all this other stuff that you see out there, the knives have been getting smaller. They've been getting thinner. They've been getting back to cutting tools, you know, and not the pry bar mentality. And it's a great thing.
Trends, or would you attest that to an advancement in skill, education, et cetera, as people learn?
I got it. My thought, it's always the evolution of the guy that's doing the bushcraft himself. If you're starting off, it's whatever knife you have on hand. And then as you start learning your skills and getting better. Me personally, I'm a wood carver. I like small stuff. I like small knives. But that's what it just due to my evolution of working with a knife. That's what I ended up working with. And I just like the small use of the knife. Now, if I was somebody that was hacking through bushes all the time and that was the first knife I got was maybe that, you know, $10 machete and I just worked off of that. And grew up
learning how to Rambo knife, man.
Everybody had the Rambo knife. That was first
thing. I broke mine the first day.
Broke the cutting tool. Broke it in half. Compass never got me home. Yeah. Matches never worked. Yeah. But yeah,
the wire saw worked once.
Yeah,
yeah.
But yeah, I mean to me, when you first start getting into the outdoors as somebody that's working in the bushcraft, you start figuring out like what works best for you, and you know, you start with that cheap knife, and then you start working on the quality knife, and then you start working on the knife that fits you the best. And I think it's an evolution for every person that works with a knife. And I think that's where you start ending up getting with the varieties. I don't think you'll ever get to one bushcraft knife that everybody keeps talking about. I think it's more belonging to the person that's using the knife.
Y'all still haven't created the perfect survival knife either, right? Like, somebody's always got something to say about that, don't they?
Well, no. Oddly enough, the evolution occurs for us, too. I mean, as we've gotten better as knife makers, our designs have improved, and our, you know, grinds have improved, our finishes have improved. And you see that, you know, the genesis that we made when we started in 2013 is not the genesis that you get today. It's 100% better than the knives that we were putting out.
So you definitely see a trend, though, where the knives are getting smaller and
yes
thinner.
Yes and no. I think that people are starting to see a combination of not necessarily every knife needs to be that sweet stuff bot. There's a certain area where definitely people gravitate to, and that's always going to be that 4 to 5 inch knife. But, you know, there are things that are out there, like our prom. Who'd ever thought that knife would be as wildly successful as it is? I mean, that started out as a one-hit wonder, and we just kept getting people wanting it more and more and more, and it's probably one of the smallest knives that we made.
So, Mike, you said something that I want to kind of go back to, is you said bushcraft doesn't require a knife. It requires kind of a toolkit or a kit. Here's one of my first shots across the bow is buying stuff is not the same. Gear acquisition you can buy. Skill acquisition you have to earn.
Correct.
And so what I see within the bushcraft community oftentimes is flat lays of pristine gear, and then the same people are speaking with authority.
Preach it.
In a way where they have a very strong opinion on something, but their gear says that maybe that strong opinion is not based on time in the ground, like in the dirt.
Oh, absolutely.
But they're getting likes on Instagram because of the flat play.
That's right.
It looks pretty. Sure.
But couldn't the argument also be made that exactly. In a true bushcraft sense that you would have to actually make the knife?
I mean, you can, as far as I'm concerned, you can argue any point you want to in bushcraft, and there's always going to be a counter.
Somebody to counter.
So, what I can tell you that we see in our advanced bushcraft class is I can almost always pick out a new student because they show up with a very large, like they'll show up with a brand new 5 or SE5 or SE6. And you start looking around, all the instructors and all the experienced students are almost all using neck knives, smaller, thinner knives. And what we see is people come to us through these large knives, and then with experience, they quickly learn the limitations of these sharpened pry bars and the other stuff that looks cool and looks good for the gram. They start to realize that there are limitations to a quarter inch thick, you know, sharpened pry bar. It doesn't cut great. It doesn't, and it takes some real skill. Now, there are absolutely people out there that can use it with great skill, but they've done their dirt time. They've done their due diligence to develop that skill. And what we generally see is our advanced bushcraft class gets repeat students, and those knives normally get smaller and thinner as their
progress.
Skills increase.
Yeah.
And
totally agree with that.
That's something that we see oftentimes, and it you know, here comes small. A freebie too, is that I believe personally that a big portion of our market is solely based on marketing hype.
Amen.
And it's not always driven by the knife companies. I don't know who came up, like, we just make knives, you know, somebody say hard use or this, that, or the other, but we don't make a bushcraft knife. We make some knives that are better for that application. But also I've seen guys do great bushcraft stuff you know, with big knives. And then if you go to the Amazon and you listen to Jeff Randall and Mike Perrin, rest in peace, those guys talk about what the indigenous people down there in the jungle can do with a Tramontina $2 machete.
Right.
Pales in comparison, but they don't know bushcraft. That's just life for them.
This is their life, yeah.
So,
yeah, I mean, those guys are making blades out of leaf springs or old vehicles.
Mercedes or whatever.
I mean,
trucks.
It's their lifestyle. It's what they use.
Don't have a bushcraft knife. They have a machete, and they do everything with that machete, whether it's chopping firewood or cleaning a chicken. And if the machete breaks, guess what happens? It's a shorter machete. And the portion that broke is now a smaller knife that they may use somewhere else.
So
introduce yourself and give us your opinion.
So my name is Adam Fry. I own Mountain King Survival. Years ago on this talk, I came up with the Kit of Steel, and it was my determination that the Kit of Steel is basically, it's the type of steel that's in your kit that determines the longevity of your kits. So I think the one tool option is junk, and it's very dangerous, because if you lose one tool, then you're done. You're completely done. I also formulated the opinion that your knife can be too large, your axe can be too small, your saw can be too small, and if you have one auger, it's not enough, because not every tool or not every job takes the same auger size. So, and that's why I sell my own auger tools that I've created. So, but ultimately, yes, it's the style of kit, solid steel in your kit that determines longevity of your kit. So, but, and to your point too, like this is, my friend made this, is a Rudy Dean Skinner. And I took this to Alaska. I was on a Discovery Channel show called 100 Days Wild. And so not only did we skin moose and salmon and grouse and red squirrel, but also carved everything that I carved up there with this knife. So, and it's not, like I said, I truly believe.
And just remember, we have listeners that don't get to see it. So can you describe the knife a little bit just so they know what you're holding?
So ultimately, it's probably got a 4-inch handle. It's full tang knife.
It's thin.
It is thin.
It's
high carbon steel. It's got grooves in the top in the front and the back. So for control of the blade when you get into skinning.
And who was the maker again?
Rudy Dean. Okay. Rudy Dean. He makes all the fighting tomahawks for the Navy SEALs out of Virginia. So, but regardless, this is the knife that I took to Alaska.
Is it G10, micarta? What do you got on A2, the handle scales there?
Looks like G10 scales, maybe.
Yeah, on your scales.
I'm over here thinking it's a knife.
Yeah, it's a little dark. Eh?
It's shiny.
In the studio.
It's stab stuff.
Looks like G10.
Well, he did want opinions.
So I'm also of the opinion, like, dude, if you can have the appropriate tool to do the job, have the appropriate tool. I'm not a massive fan of like showing off my knife by batoning through wood, because I think it's a dangerous thing, because your edge in the forest is precious, and your knife in the forest is precious. And if you can take the hatchet and the knife, do that. So that's just my opinion.
Well, I think there's definitely something to having the right tool for the job.
Absolutely.
But obviously, you know, everything that we carry is a compromise to begin with.
You don't see many mechanics working on your whole car with a crescent wrench.
Right. Amen.
Right. I mean, it's absolutely illegal to work on a Black Hawk helicopter with an adjustable wrench.
Yeah.
You'll get in trouble. I don't read for that. So,
I mean, ask me how I know.
Yeah, well, I heard a guy. So. So,
well, thank you very much,
Matt. My pleasure,
Casey. I know you've got some opinions on this.
Oh boy. Well, I missed part of the conversation because Taylor Martin of Best Aim EDC is currently trapped in the middle of nowhere, South Carolina, And Joe Flowers is on the way to hopefully find them and save them.
Yay. But
Taylor does not have good luck.
No, Joe Flowers should be here in this discussion.
Is he really driving that little truck?
He was until that sweet little tiny Subaru Japanese truck of his overheated or thermostat. I don't know. Okay. So it's being towed back home, and he is without a truck in the middle of nowhere. So I was facilitating that. That
so the adventure has pickup,
yep.
And,
yep, and this and is fresh kind of too.
Are they carrying?
Well, that's a really good question. Hopefully, something sharp that'll stab somebody in the middle of the night. There,
Matt be part of his Best Aim EDC.
I'm sure.
Probably. I love that guy, and his questionable choices of vehicles. But no, as far as like bushcraft goes, and I mean, I don't know.
You see a lot of people come through all your classes, so we've had a few folks. Seen some trends.
Oh, totally. I mean, I think a lot of what a beginner bushcrafter kind of runs into with being a bit of drama or issue, you know, is gear over knowledge. That's one big thing. It's like everybody buys the right gear or what they think is the right gear, but they don't know how to use it, you know? And to me, bushcraft has a lot to do with a skill set. You know, Morris Kuchansky had said, you know, it's not what you, it's not as much about what you carry, you know what I mean? Knowledge weighs nothing.
Right.
So gear isn't the full picture, isn't the biggest part. But it definitely does play a part, you know. But knowing how to do it and how to use the gear is big. So I think, you know, starting with the right stuff, it's a foundational gear item, maybe is fine. But knowing why you have a fixed blade knife or certain types of steel or whatever your tool of choice may be, you know, in that situation, I think that has a lot to do with it.
Without cutting our nose off to spite our face, because we all sell stuff within that community. Like I think the bushcraft community, whatever that is or means, is a good part of our customer base. But I think we've kind of turned the original notion of what we would consider wood lore, camp lore, bushcraft, and turned it inside out. I think Moore says the more you know, the less you carry. I think it's him. Mm-hmm. And what we see now, and to me, that embodies doing more with less, challenging yourself by taking fewer tools, fewer equipment, having the ability to adapt and overcome and use your creative mind and your skill to work around or work with nature. And what our current state of bushcraft is we want to do less with more. Like, we want to have more stuff, but we know less about it. We want to have more stuff, but we know how to use it less. We don't know how to maximize our potential with what we have in our hand, but we've got options, but we're not fully utilizing, you know, even one or two of the tools that we have in this kit. And so I love to see people challenge themselves, and I encourage people, I mean, personally, to like, for me personally, I like small knives. Well, I'm probably going to take a big knife to my next class just because I don't really like big knives. I think there's limitations, and so I'm going to
force yourself
to eat like my words, personally and working I'm going to work yourself. On my skill set, yeah, with yeah. a big knife, where I know I much prefer using a smaller blade that's thinner, that has better cutting geometry, and there's going to be 19 knuckleheads in a class with big knives, so if I need a big knife, I'll bum one of theirs, and I don't have to tote it around, you know? Yeah. But I do think that that's something where we kind of jumped the shark on that notion of doing more with less, and we're doing less with more.
You may be able to back this up because y'all teach classes just like we do. I also find, too, that there is the insurance policy thing like Casey was talking about, where people, I think maybe what I'm getting at is I think that the majority of the people sitting here today, we all take a lot of our experience and our skills for granted. Maybe we grew up in the woods doing this. And I have a lot of people come up to me and say, well, you know, I just now have been made aware of I need to train. And so, you know, they come to the school loaded up with whatever, you know, gear they thought had the best reviews, or they talked to a buddy, or they had a subscription box or whatever, and they just don't know what they need to bring with them. And like you said, through the journey they learn and they start adjusting, because all of us have gone through evolutions in our own gear.
Yeah.
Like, God, I've never come up with a perfect kit. I don't think any of y'all have either. At no, this
it's
point
ever changing.
It's always changing.
But they've got to be willing to put themselves in uncomfortable situations.
Position.
And to, more importantly, to test their knowledge, test their skill, and be willing to walk into a place of ignorance with an open mind, saying, I'm going to challenge myself here, and I'm going to do something I'm uncomfortable with.
Well, and that's where I feel people learn the best.
That, yeah.
I mean, I spent 25 years working on chiller machinery. Some of my best lessons was when I let the smoke out of something that's not supposed to smoke.
Oh, the holy smoke has left the building, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, nothing's wrong with failure. It's, you learn from it.
But I think we've got to be willing to do that.
Failure, right?
Yeah. Like, you got to have those folks learning. Willing to do it.
Yeah, it's a learning thing, and when you're uncomfortable, and when there's a purpose behind doing something, you're going to figure it out more than likely. At some point, you might break your knife
one way or the other.
Well, I think you hit on it earlier, though. Like us using the exact same, we could have a kukri, we could have an Opinel in our pocket, but we understand the limitations of the tool that we're using for whatever the thing is that we're doing,
right?
Whereas somebody doesn't have that experience. Maybe they have the theoretical knowledge, but they haven't turned it into practical knowledge yet because they haven't broke stuff. They haven't tested themselves and gone to those limits.
And let's face it, some people don't learn from things like that. And I know people that every time they get on a tractor, they screw something up on it, and they say the tractor's a piece of crap and it's not working right. No, you're a horrible operator. Like, you're trying to, do sewing. XYZ with something that's designed to do ABC.
It's called mechanical sympathy. Yeah. Know your machine.
Yep.
But all right, guys, we have another guest here.
Go ahead.
Oh, my name's Jonathan Burton. I'm the Bearded Burton on social platforms. And this is going to piggyback off what you guys were talking about. I've learned through teaching and then being a part of classes and learning from people that they know way more than I do. Connecting to that skill and connecting to the area that you're trying to learn in is far more important than all the gear that money could buy. I have realized that the stuff that I started using and working with in the beginning, like around a decade ago, I still love it and I still like it. I love knives. There's certain ones that come out and I have the impulse and I want to buy it and I want to use it. But I know ultimately if I'm not putting a skill to the gear that I have, it's got to be put in the closet. And a lot of that comes from the memories that you make with the stuff that you're bringing. And I think a lot of that revolves around something that we've lost with the bushcraft and outdoor community, and that's community. I feel like this event and going to an SE class or taking a class with you or whatever, in the beginning we're wanting to learn that skill. And we're wanting to increase our knowledge of what we're wanting to profit from. But in the end of it, we're remembering like the times that sucked, that we were wet and cold.
Oh God!
And we're remembering when Shane challenged me to leave the big knife and try to use a stone, like whatever it might be. And so I feel like we've kind of created a paradox of like connecting to nature or connecting to the class that we're with or the community that we're with or the school that we want to learn from, and then trying to like push gear and stuff on people. And
well, that's the society or that we
it's
now.
The microwave doesn't work fast enough. We're impatient, like we need it. But I got back from just spending 10 days in the Sonoran Desert at Winter Camp, and I walked around with a little cloth and a water filter bandolier style and a little neck knife and running around with Dave Holiday. And dude, it rejuvenated everything in me. Like, we can get to a point that we do this over and over and over again, and we all have this passion that fuels us. That's the gas we're putting in the tank every day. But eventually it's real hard to run on passion alone. Mm-hmm. And you gotta reconnect to why you did this. And I feel like a lot of the people that did this before us with no technology and a lot less gear and stuff that broke all the time, like they were connected to the land that they were on. They were connected to the people that they were with. They knew, man, this guy, he's really good at making pots. This dude can kill animals with bows like nobody's business. And you feed and support those people in your community. And it just, I see that consumerism and greed and just corruptive stuff have just caused such division among us that we're no longer able to feed, like, dude, you're really good at hunting. You're really good at teaching.
Making pots.
Yeah. Whatever it is, man. Yeah. Like, you know, and it's not that we need to just focus on one skill or one thing, but I love this idea of the co-op, because we're putting names to faces, but we're also like, we're building these memories that like next year when we're gearing up for co-op, man, last year, remember whenever we had fun around the fire, you did this and we tried.
Yeah, the connectivity.
Like, yeah, man, like that's something I think, and obviously that's not popular because we can't sell, like people can't, companies can't sell that. But we as
well, you can bring it to them as they come to the class. And we as instructors,
we as people that are involved in this community that care about it and love it. Like that's something that I can make it a point in my head before the class even starts that I'm going to try to personally connect to each person in my class, because that's going to be way more important to them than any knife or any, you know, like. Seeing someone get a hand drill fire for the first time, that's a primal thing in them.
Oh, God, yeah, a spiritual journey.
That's a primal thing in them that ignites them that they didn't think they could do. And now they've built that connection with, man, I was tired and hungry, and I got that. And, yes, they're going to remember that they got the hand drill, but they're going to also remember where they were, who was with them, what it took to get there. And so it's not necessarily a hot take, but maybe my emphasis is like us focusing more on community and connecting to,
and like Maya Angelou that said, you may not remember what people say, but you remember the feeling that you had when you were with that person you're speaking to this.
It's community. A powerful thing. I mean, that mental survival, like that we feed, like us being able to overcome things and banding together and putting, you know, our egos aside. That's a really powerful thing that can get us through things that, you know, a really good knife, who cares? Like, I mean,
well, I can tell you too, the people do stuff here with rocks that come to Georgia Bushcraft or any of our events in general, they all speak to our connection.
Absolutely.
They see it 100% and it blows their minds and they want to be a part of that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what I was actually going to go off on that, guys, is I think some of it is skill set, but I also think some of what we're representing is this. We're presenting an idea, and some people are never going to be able to accomplish getting outdoors, but by buying gear or watching people they like, they dream about it.
Yeah.
I want to say that maybe 30% of our customers don't ever even use the gear, but they want to be able to think one day they could. So they're buying an idea. They're not buying a product. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a lot different with a lot of things, but at least in the outdoor community, I think people are buying memories of what they used to do, or they want to create memories. They're hoping to be able to do that because
it's an emotional purchase.
It's an emotional purchase, but even the bushcraft itself, I think, is an emotional thing. It's that people want to get outdoors. They want to be the explorer. They want to be the adventurer, whether they have the skills or the right products to do it. The idea behind bushcraft is that people are getting outdoors. Some people never get outdoors. Some people are in their apartment with a closet full of really cool gear that never gets dirty. We know they're out there.
Well, I mean, not just that. But they watch people like us, too, like they follow our channels, and they live vicariously through what
Absolutely.
We do.
Absolutely. They live vicariously through it, which is really important.
Like, I mean, clearly, I sell gear. I'm a gear guy, right, with BattleBox. We have thousands of subscribers that get gear every single month. Cool gear. Gear that's useful.
Right.
I don't know how many of these people are actually getting out and really using the stuff, but my purpose is I want to encourage them to go outdoors and do this stuff, right?
You're the gateway.
Like this
drug.
Is the gateway yeah, drug.
Both of y'all are creating a community.
Yeah.
You're creating it's something that people want to be a part of.
It goes both ways, right? Like example, okay, I went to Colorado this past summer and spent some time with Donnie Dust. I'm sure some of y'all know who he is.
Oh, yeah, I know Donnie.
I mean, the dude, you give him a rock, a couple rocks, and a loincloth, he's good to go, right? Okay, I fully respect that, okay? I'm not that guy.
Me neither.
But he fully respects me as well as a gear guy. So it goes both ways, right? I'm not going to look down upon somebody because they don't have the gear I think they need. I'm not going to look down at somebody that's got more gear than I think they should have. If they're outdoors and they're trying and they're putting forth effort and they're learning, and then they realize, hey, I don't need to tote 27 knives in my pack. I don't need to tote a freaking full-filling axe every time I go out into the woods. That's okay because it's a learning process. I was there.
Okay. I think what you're saying, too, speaks to what Jonathan was saying, because you took the time to get on somebody else's level, and you're not judging them, right?
No, I'm fascinated.
You're seeing what they're doing, and you're willing to help because they have a good attitude.
Being open to
it was the same way for me as being the gear guy.
But he was the same way to me as being the gear guy.
Y'all had a mutual respect.
We went out into the woods in Colorado, out in the middle of no freaking where. It was freaking awesome. God, the place is gorgeous. And he literally had a buckskin pack that he made himself. He had a couple blades that he napped himself, and a handkerchief. And I had a backpack. I had my neck knife that I always carry with me. I had a fixed blade with me. I got a pocket knife. I mean, I had a good amount of gear. And not once did he look down upon me as not being a bushcrafter because I had a lot of gear.
Right.
And nor did I look down upon him because he didn't have
the gear.
He has skill sets that I would love to learn and try. And he taught me things and he showed me things. And I showed him things that he didn't know. Like I had a tarp. We were going to put up a shelter. It started raining. I said, hey, man, I got a tarp. I got some paracord.
5 minutes, we're done, baby.
We're going to throw up a ridge line. And he was literally like, dude, I didn't realize that this is that nice. Like I'd be out here looking for a freaking cave to get in right now, you know. Right. So the thing is there's no, in my opinion, anything outdoors. I don't care if it's hunting, fishing. I don't care if you're the guy with the daggum $98,000 bass boat or the kid with the freaking, you know, little John boat that you got at freaking Bass Pro Shops. If you're out there fishing, I'm cool with you. It's all good. And that's the thing, like, in anything, man, there's no need to be pointing the fingers and this, that. Okay, yeah, you may have a bunch of gear. It's like the kid that shows up to work, you know, when I was a mechanic, and he comes in with all the brand new shiny tools. He ain't even turned a freaking wrench, right? Mm-hmm. And then you got, like, the journeyman over there going, oh, there's a greenhorn, blah, blah. Come on, man. Like, there's no room for something.
That's not, I think that speaks to your maturity, too.
That's not building community. That's not building community. It's not. And that's the only thing that's gonna keep us doing this. Like that's the reason why we do it. Like I've never met you, but I'm excited to hang out with you. Yeah. And I'm excited to hang out with all of you because we're here to hang out and be a part of a community and like, you know, learn from each other, bump heads and whatever it might be. Like it's so important. I think it's something that's just overlooked. I mean, there's people that I've known in the Pout House for a long time that they love every collectible knife that there is, and they love seeing knives that are used and abused and rusted and patinaed and whatever, and they may never do that with their knife, but they're a part of this community because they jumped on a forum and they interact with people that are across the world from them. And
yeah,
I think that's something that's easily lost, in my opinion.
I mean, there's enough crap in the world
to divide us.
Like you go to any comment section on any post on any topic whatsoever, I don't care what it is, there's going to be plenty of negativity and pointing fingers and calling names and saying, well, you're not as good as me, or I know more than you, or I got better gear than you, or you should do it this way, you should do it that way. And there's no place for that in the woods.
One of the things I've found, this as an observation, and this is especially it held true before social media, but it really, I think, is even more so now, is that I'm very fortunate to be around some people that are way smarter than me. They're very deeply skilled and are lifelong learners. The best instructors I know are students first.
Forever student mentality.
So, but the one thing I notice is that if I ask one of these guys a question, it's almost never a clear-cut answer because they live in the gray. And the reason they live in the gray is because they've had enough experience to know that there are very few absolutes in this stuff. And the ones that often speak with the most authority and the most absolutes, that are the most emphatic and have the strongest opinions, are the ones with the least experience. And they don't have the knowledge base to back it up. And you take a guy like Craig or James Gibson or Patrick Rollins, these guys that I'm fortunate enough to be around, who have a deep understanding and a deep experience base, and you ask them a question, and they always rub their chin first, and they think about it because they've experienced that situation, and the outcome has probably been different on a good portion of those, whereas the one guy that talks about it with the most authority and the most assertiveness on social media is a guy that's been in that situation exactly one time. Mm-hmm. And so we're not throwing shade, and the purpose of this whole thing is not to throw shade, but it is a chin check that we all have to take, I think, and we all have to look at ourselves and look at our community and say, hey, there's people we should be listening to and turning the volume up. And then let's face it, there's a lot of people that we just need to hit the mute button on, too.
Dude, you're spitting truth right there, because I know myself.
I'm trying to be nice.
me and Patrick have taught at a lot of mutual events together, like the DuPont Rescue Experience, right? So me and him have teamed up and taught together, and you're right. He's a humble guy. And I understand exactly what you're saying as far as, like, we always worked really well together when we were teaching together. But you're right about that, because me and him, that's something that we talk about as instructors. When you got the guy that's got 50,000 certifications, he takes 30 minutes at the beginning of the class to tell you how certified he is. Oh, yeah. And then he speaks over the students' heads. Yeah. Without connecting with his audience whatsoever.
It's story time.
Right. Exactly. So, you know, what you're saying, I think you win the podcast just for that.
Yeah. Were we competing? I've got so much more to say.
Wait a minute, JJ. Back up.
Darn,
yeah.
He is over there on his notepad.
One of the words I hate most in anything is, especially if they speak out of themselves, is the expert.
Yes. Yeah.
I mean,
there are really no experts out here,
man. Because I'll be honest with you, I can sit back. I mean, I was a journeyman mechanic. I know how to fix chillers pretty dang well. But I promise you this, I've scratched my head a lot, even as a journeyman mechanic, right? There's two, you know, tradesmen and others below that level, if you want to even call it that, think that you should know it all. And you do know it all. They look up to you or whatever.
Right.
Just means you've been doing it. You've been doing it longer.
Cannot stand that.
I've just been screwing up longer.
Yeah.
I mean, it's basically what it is. You know? I mean,
I stand on a mountain of mistakes.
Yeah.
I mean, I can see a lot clearer.
I mean, I never was good at book learning, school and stuff like that. I was a hands-on guy. Like, let me do it. Let me figure out how this works. Let me take it apart. I won't never forget the time my dad came across an old school typewriter, like a real mechanical old school typewriter. I took that thing apart, dude. You want to talk about a bunch of parts?
Right.
He came in to the garage, and I had the whole garage covered in little parts from a freaking typewriter. He's like, what are you doing? I was like, I'm just going to take it apart, see how it works. You know, and he's like, you're never going to put that back together. Challenge accepted.
I'm in, son.
It took me forever, but I put it back
together.
You still
did it, though,
you know,
right?
I mean, I did it, and I learned a lot through doing that. And it's the same way with bushcraft.
It's probably a seven minute video on YouTube on how to put that typewriter. <Yeah. laughs>
But I say that in cases, if you're interested in getting in bushcraft,
sign up for my box.
Buy the gear. Go out and do it. You know what I mean? And then figure out what you need to be good at. Go to classes. You know,
What we need to do right now is we need to tell that guy or girl who's listening right now, because they're looking for our advice, right? Like we always say, train, 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 right? But, you know, they go to our websites, they sign up for a class. We have recommendations, obviously, on our website for what you should bring to the class. But maybe that's what they need to hear. Maybe they need to come see one of us in a class so that we can help them.
Yeah.
I would go even one farther and say, if you think you're an expert or you think you're skilled, then prove it. And I don't mean prove it to me or prove it to you. I mean, go prove it to yourself.
Right.
No one knows you better than you. So if you're like,
but I can't feel
expert,
good about myself unless you tell me that I'm good, bro.
That's kind of the point. Yeah.
Good job, JJ. Good job.
Well, that's the thing. Like, I mean, I'm clearly no expert, dude. I'm glad to be here because
are there any experts here? I need to know.
I want to learn. I like to learn. I like to, you know, can I do this? And that's the thing is go out, you know. Let's say you are watching, you know, one of us on YouTube or Instagram or whatever, or any of the social media things, and we're doing something, go out and do it and try it, you know, and
to emulate what you're seeing or you're
not,
living.
Not that
vicariously
we
through.
Necessarily are the expert in doing whatever task that may be, but go out and see how you can skin that cat. You know what I mean? Go out and figure
not
out.
Literally.
Do you have
to like unless, I mean, well, it depends on which country you're in.
Oh, okay. I was be just sure thinking domestic cat. Yeah, I was like, I don't know if you should give that advice.
Well, I mean, don't skin your cat. Maybe
I'm curious to hear
cat,
Craig and Brian's hot take on this.
Go ahead, Brian.
Oh,
you've been here.
Oh, well, I was just going to say, listening to everybody talk about it, it's interesting to hear. You mentioned respect and, you know, you just talked about people getting an opinion about what they should bring or whatever. And I think people need to remember that it's okay. Like, if you're newer to it, it's okay to not, like, go out and try something. And it's okay if you fail at it. And it's okay if you're looking at the gear list and you don't have all the pieces of gear on that list. It's okay. Like, you don't need all that stuff. Nope. You need to get out and do what you think you can do. But it's okay. And don't listen to the people who are saying, like, you didn't do this right, or you should have done this, or you have to start a fire this way. That's crap. I mean, does that cover the swearing? Crap? Yeah. But it's crap. I mean, don't listen to those people. It's okay.
Well, you're not doing it for them. Like that's right. The whole point, yeah, too, is like, we got to get past this. I'm not going to do it for the gram. I'm doing it for me because I want to be better.
Yep.
And I actually think you're better when you use and begin and start out with inferior tools to begin with, because you learn. We talk about mechanical sympathy, or we talk about knowing your tool and the limitations of your tool. So if I do have one knife, I'm not going to take it out there and do, you know, pry with it. Not that that's an issue. But
I think you have a warranty bin that says otherwise.
Yeah. I do. And I brought some, by the way, a whole box full of bonehead moves for your viewing pleasure. But I think when you begin that journey within, like, it's not the tools that mark the beginning of the journey. It's just like you, I don't care if you use grandma's old hickory knife, go out. You'd be surprised how much you can do with it, just a good old hickory knife, yeah, you know?
Dude, we have tons of them in various shapes from.
Oh, yeah.
And with the gear, what we're trying to look for is, yeah, maybe they're getting the gear, but at least we're initiating the spark for them to get out and try.
That's my goal.
I mean, you don't want that one person to go out there and tell them, like, hey, you only have to be one knife and go out there and start with one knife. I don't want them to ruin their first experience going out and thinking, this is going to be the worst thing I've ever done in my entire life.
They're really getting the dopamine hit from the purchase.
Right.
Right. What fuels my fire is when I see somebody empowered.
Yeah.
Right.
I
when
think
they
Craig
get
is
it.
An excellent example of this. Tell them a little bit about the Chamonix and how you present that as a complete package, because I don't think a lot of people really know this.
Okay. So I'm
Craig. Introduce yourself.
I'm Craig Cottle, the director of Nature Lawn School out of Central Kentucky. I'm also the designer of the Chamonix built by LT Wright Knives. And what do you want me to cover, Mikey?
Just talk about your complete package.
What do you want me to say?
You not only sell the knife, but you provide all the videos and support.
Oh, okay, yeah, sure. So
the money comes later.
One of the things that I saw when I never thought that. Well, I didn't know, would people like my design, and so I didn't know. I'd hoped to sell 25, and now we've sold hundreds, and we're selling probably going to be selling hundreds more. So very pleased by that. But one of the things that I wanted to offer, because I felt like people that are buying the knife that I designed and you guys built is support of me, and so I want to support them. And so I created a series of videos that are made only for those people that buy that knife. It doesn't go out to anybody else. They're not public on YouTube. They're on my website now. And so I'm going to now add to that every month a video using my knife to do something that supports that community of people in an effort to do exactly what you all been talking about, which is just building community and helping people grow. And that's, I think, what you're looking at, Mikey? Is that what you're asking me about?
Yeah, that's exactly.
Yeah.
And it's okay. Actually brilliant. Absolutely brilliant.
It is, very much so.
No,
you
it's
win.
No, that's
you're in the lead.
Oh, okay, you're
not
in the
over
lead.
Yet.
While I was sitting here listening, something came to mind, and I hope this makes sense, but I have a question for the panel and those that are listening. What's the best birthday cake?
The one Todd's we just had for Todd is
just like the knife, whatever one I have in hand.
I think that's the point of what we could sit and talk about bushcraft and what it is and what it looks like and what it feels like for Days and hours. I mean, yeah. we could do this for the rest of our lives. And I think what it comes down to is a few things. Is that our premise, the way we teach classes, is based on a puzzle piece, mindset, skills, tactics, and gear. A puzzle of those four pieces of the, those are the pieces of the puzzle. That's what makes up self-reliance, survival, bushcraft, whatever it might be. Add on top of that, you've got to add in geography, skill level, experience, and the situations you find yourself in. And if, for example, if I want to throw the unpopular opinion out there.
Please do.
So, because this comes up in this discussion, is bow drill fire making was not done throughout the country of the United States of America by Native American people, indigenous peoples. Most people back then did hand drills. And so when you're teaching bow drill fire all over the country and you're having students do that, you're teaching them something that was never done. And my opinion, which goes back to the knife, is why should I redesign something that was used for, you know, at times the knife that I designed was built on the long knives premise. Those guys would walk out in the woods for 13 months, 14 months, 2 years, and not come back. Why should I do something different from them? Those guys are better than me. Okay. Same thing is true here. If you've got people that built fires out of the earth for 10,000 years and they did it with hand drill, why are you going to do bow drill in that part of the world?
Because I got my YouTube patch.
Exactly. Exactly. It is a cool skill. Okay. But quite frankly, it's just not. I mean, we've got to understand that certain geographical regions are not open and beneficial to do some of these skills that you see on the gram. You've got to really understand your environment. That's why our school is called Nature Reliant School, because we have to rely upon nature.
Bro, I don't know, man.
The light bulb.
Boo, everybody goes
crazy. Every time I've ever done a bow drill fire, a hand drill, some kind of friction fire, whether it's a fire saw, a pump drill, whatever, I've always had a lighter and a ferro rod in my pocket.
I promise you.
Yeah.
Right?
Like that one.
if you've gotten to that point, things are bad.
We teach primitive fire so that you'll carry a lighter. And if the lighter's bad, you're going to use your backup lighter. If the lighter's bad, you're going to use your backup.
Amen. Right.
So I think it's cool. It's a good experience to have. Is it something I'm using in a survival situation? Good God, not. And then so much of what we do or what we see is carefully curated and crafted. We don't, and this is one thing. Hey, here's a hot take.
Let it out, baby.
Here's a hot take. I'm on fire. How many people within the community of any community, whether it be firearms, bushcraft, survival, you name it, how often do they show their failures?
I do every time I can think of it. It helps. It actually, it's with a student, real. When you show them you're human.
You learn more from your failures than you do from your successes.
But for the most part, no one talks about the failure. No one talks about, Heather screwed up a bunch of pieces that are going to be a limited run.
Were you pointing at me? No. I was going to own all my failures. I share them online all the time.
But if we wanted to really be real, then we would see more people show the screw-ups, show the failures, because that is where the learning takes place.
I think it makes
you more human as an instructor as well. It helps you connect with your audience. Some of my failures actually make the best stories when I'm trying to make a point when 100%. I'm instructing.
100%. I ran into this a lot writing the books, because every one of my books, at the beginning of every chapter, there's a story. And then that chapter deals with whatever happened in that story. And so my marketing team from my publisher was like, Craig, you keep writing about stories where you screwed things up a lot. I don't think you need to be doing that. I'm like, I mean, it was such a foreign concept to me that people don't learn from their screw-ups. But from a marketing perspective, which is quite frankly social media, from a publishing perspective, that's what they wanted me to do. Just show that you're an expert.
Yeah.
Right. Show that you're an expert. Word. You don't make mistakes.
The internet's full of them.
Yeah. I mean, I don't. That is such a foreign concept to me. I can't even grasp.
But you're showing people how you became an expert, and you are an expert in your field. But you're showing people the honest truth about how
it has to be.
It's also an aspect of humility.
There's also an aspect of authenticity online. Don't you think that the people who follow you because they know that you're sharing your failures along with your successes? I mean, people follow
because you have that blue check mark.
Oh, that's it. I don't have the blue check mark, but I'm just saying I get more comments from people on being a real person. It's like, well, who else would I be? But in comparison to these people that are online trying to say they're the experts, or
didn't you all say something about flat lays earlier?
Yeah.
About what? Flat lays. I mean, I keep really and also forgive me. I'm getting there now, Scott. I'm getting there now, Shane. I'm getting hot. EDC. How many freaking EDC piles do you have, bro? I mean, come on.
I love the use of bra.
I mean, come on. That and flat lays, these are the perfect representations of things. And Shane and I were discussing this earlier about boots, belt, and what watch.
Boots, belts, watch.
I'm always looking at knives. I'm always looking at boots. And I'm always shaking hands and feeling hands when I meet people. If that hand is not calloused, you're not telling me about a bow drill fire.
Everybody's checking their hands.
Yeah,
you're just not going to tell me about. You're not going to tell me anything about bushcraft if I shake your hand and it's not calloused. You're just not going to do it. And if your boots are pretty,
I just applied my moisturizer, man.
If a guy walks into a group like this and he's got pretty boots on, he's probably going to say something about it because he feels awkward.
Wait, I'm supposed to be wearing boots?
Because it's like a black belt in martial arts. I mean, my boots and my knife better be dirty. Yeah. It because it shows that I'm out there doing stuff.
I don't think any of
us
would show up with something new, man. We would feel.
Well, we're going to talk. We're going to talk about it. Right?
So
I got to rub it in the dirt
the
first.
The conversation that Craig was referencing is: I have a buddy that has been in some alphabet soup unit, and one of the ways he gauged the people he was boots, belt, and watch. That was his first pass. And that has stuck with me for a long time. And with our experience, we went on, I don't know, we have a ratsar.org is our search and rescue team nonprofit. That's kind of how we've chosen to give back to our community. We serve all over the Southeast doing missing person searches. I can't tell you how many times we've responded to areas and we've had emergent volunteers that are locals. And we know our team is kind of known to be pretty technically proficient, and we're known that we don't complain and we'll just get after it and get it done. We don't often take people that we haven't vetted with us for a lot of different reasons. Sometimes we're doing technical rope work or other stuff, and there's sometimes where we just don't want to bring people that aren't vetted into the field. But I can tell you on a few different occasions, one occasion specifically, I made a first pass boot belts watch on this guy. And then I went on to the chain smoking, the Pepsi, and the Mountain Dew bottle in his back pocket. And I thought, we're going to have to haul this guy out. He's going to get out there in the woods on us, and he's going to stroke out. That dude walked my butt off.
But don't you know nicotine and caffeine are a legend's diet, bro?
Worn out pair of cowboy boots. We were going up stuff that I'm having to kick bucket steps in. Now, not like you would snow. Like you're kicking, you're having a post hole, basically. But it's super steep, and it's just this detritus, loose, loamy soil that you can't, I mean, you got a post hole in to get up. This dude's going up and down the mountain. He's lighting one cigarette off to the end of the night. He's chain smoking. He never quit talking. He never shut up. He was never out of breath, and he's chain smoking the entire time and just like funneling Mountain Dew. And so it's like that old boy, that's all that boy's ever done his entire life. Yep, you know,
right. Efficiency.
So that to me is
he's been inoculating a long time.
Dude, yeah, man, like,
pickled.
I felt like I was getting cancer from the secondhand smoke. It was not even.
I only know because I'm one of those guys. Because right?
You can relate. He's
you know,
my
I've got
hero,
14
man.
Years in search and rescue, yeah. And I've got the county record back in Cherokee County smoking the entire way through the.
Man, well, this guy, it's cool to see those people. And it's good to know that those
test.
Guys are out there.
Yeah.
You know, and to be in the presence of those guys that have tremendous skill, but then also that have local knowledge, and we go back to how he was raised. Like, that's all that dude's ever known. That's all that guy's done his entire life. He's got more skill and more experience, especially in that local AO, in that local area, that none of us would have. So
So what did you learn from that? Don't judge a book by its cover.
No, I still judge a book. I still judge a book by its cover.
Belt and watch.
I feel like we have to.
But you're willing to admit when you're wrong.
We have to have some discernment.
Right? Discernment, yeah.
So for me, we have to practice some healthy discernment, because there's still a lot of people I don't want to bring out into the places we go without it becoming a rescue mission. I don't think there's anything wrong with discernment. I don't think there's anything wrong with judgment. But you have to be open to people's capabilities, and we've seen this too, is like we've got members on our own team at times where they may not know we feel like we know their limitations better, but sometimes you have to let life and experience introduce them to their limitations so that we aren't seen as the people that inhibit or I don't want to take that experience away. I think we all need to find our limits. It's not up to me to tell somebody else their limits. The problem is when it's better when it's done in training and not on a live mission.
Right, when it's critical.
When lives are at stake. And so that brings us back to the point of the time to do this and to test your limits is while you're training and willfully exposing yourself to your weaknesses versus ignoring them, and then life throws you a curveball, and now you're being exposed in a way that you're in real peril or jeopardy.
Now, there is another aspect of that, too, being that you have a SAR background as well, and I'm sure you can testify to this as well. I have been, you know, in search and rescue, we train all the time. And I don't know, I'm sure you can relate to this. You can take somebody who is very intelligent, very smart. They take tests well. They're proficient in all of the disciplines that we practice. And you put them under the right amount of pressure in some kind of situation like a mass casualty. You're working an act of God like a tornado, hurricane, fire, flood situation or something. And it's like the switch goes off and suddenly they're not themselves.
They vapor lock
on scene, right? Like, well, I'm sure you've seen
that's
that.
Part of stress inoculation. And
right.
That to me is going back and being willing to put yourself in uncomfortable situations and like specifically not in areas we all want to avoid. We all want to stay in our strengths. We want to avoid our weaknesses, but the true growth is not in our strength area. It's in bringing up the base level of your weaknesses that makes you better.
Amen.
Yeah. All right, and we are well joined by Mel.
Hi.
My girl, Mel of the Mountains.
Mel of the Mountains. I'm the buckskin girl. I make buckskins.
Tan guys' hides every day.
I tan guys' hides every chance I get, yes. Hi.
This is still family friendly.
Yes, of course it is. I have a daughter. I tan her hide, too.
There you go.
Yeah.
Y'all said something about me about skinning a cat.
But I agree with what you're saying, because when I worked for Delta Airlines, I was on the emergency response team, and we had a training incident out in the Cahuta Wilderness.
That's my back stomping grounds.
Yeah, and that was a life-changing event for me. We had like a 3-day, 14-mile hike. I had never hiked until that point. And let's just say I came out with an empty pack because all the guys, I was the only girl on the team, all the guys on the team had distributed all of my stuff from my pack on theirs. Like, I literally told them to leave me in the woods to die. I was in such bad shape, like blisters all over my feet, new boots, I know, I didn't know what I was doing.
And people say Georgia doesn't have mountains.
Oh my gosh, the Cahuttas are like vicious ones.
We know about that, yeah.
Like,
I was, Cahuta all the time.
Not only was I embarrassed that I like hindered my team, and, you know, I thought I was going to be an asset to the team, and I turned out to be complete opposite. I mean, I was there to provide computer and communication support, but part of that job, if a plane went down, was to be able to get to the site. And I was going to hinder the team, so I got off the team because that was just, I didn't want to, you know, hinder the team any more than I did in that training exercise. So that was like a rude awakening, and I kind of learned my limits on that, sadly, but I did.
So that kind of brings us up to the unpopular opinion that women don't belong in the outdoors.
Well, women that are prepared for the outdoors.
I wanted to talk. I'm a woman. And he said unpopular opinions.
Yeah.
And I think in the outdoor community, it's definitely a lot of people think women shouldn't shouldn't be out there, shouldn't be in the outdoors. I mean, I don't personally believe that.
I think you're fine out there as long as you're in a bikini.
Oh, for the gram?
I do make buckskin bikinis, just for the record.
Yeah,
but seriously,
I'm liking this. Keep going.
Well, and please give your email for rebuttal.
Okay.
I just think it's a hot topic. I don't believe it, but I truly believe a lot of people think the outdoors is only for men.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I think today, like, white males, isn't that the hot topic right now? Like,
you're the most hated.
We're the most hated.
Yeah.
Right? So we shouldn't be in the woods.
You should be in the woods or shouldn't be in the woods?
Shouldn't be.
Oh, okay. All right.
Something that I have. I'm not touching.
He's moving
that
on.
Change that subject, buddy. I'm going back to the bikini. Not my own.
Thank you.
But it's something, okay if something you do, that though. I have tried to find. I have, so this is Shane with Essie. I'll just put it out there.
Were you anonymous until this point?
No. So something that I have tried to find, we don't use ambassadors, but I love to support people on a journey of skill acquisition and making themselves better. Mm. And sadly, those women that are actually trying to do that are the ones that get muted and pushed to the bottom of the feed because all the bodacious ones in the bikinis are the ones that are taking, they get all the volume. And that, to me, is something where, as a community, it would be wise and beneficial for us all to find those women, to embrace those women, and to really put those, you know, most chicks look great in bikinis when they're in their 20s. You know? times change.
Yes, they do.
But at the same time,
I'm not sure that sounds any better when you put it in
there. I'm going to gut check you here.
Yeah, I think so. Let's I'm not make sure, you sure got we that know one. Where we're going.
You are darn good at digging a hole.
Yeah.
Man.
Need more shovels?
When you dig a hole, put down a shovel. If you give me enough rope, I think I can tie this all together.
No, but I get what you're saying.
We'll set up a mechanical advantage system and get you out, babe.
What I really like is I really wish we could embrace more females that are on that journey, and we see them truly about being better without just the sexuality of things, and it just lessens their message when they do that. So yeah. I'm speaking specifically to females out there that are looking to get noticed. Stay on your path. If you're trying to do something, be honest with yourself. Don't feel like you have to cheapen yourself or stoop, because there are people out there that are looking to put that woman up on a pedestal and say, this is what we're looking for. This woman's on a journey. She's looking to be better, and she's doing it with her clothes on.
Amen.
Not in a way that cheapens. I mean, to me, it just cheapens everything across the board.
You just made the Naked and Afraid ratings drop.
I'm clothed and confident.
I'm okay with that.
I'm clothed and confident.
Yes. Oh, I like that. That was good.
What you're saying, though, like, I can say, because, and Mel's heard me say this 100 times, I find in our classes, like, if I'm teaching a firearms class, for example, the women, doesn't matter if they're bodacious or not, the women always do better than the men most of the
they're
time because of their egos.
Yeah,
they're better students.
They're better students.
Better hand-eye
coordination,
right. Yeah. That's something that we see. Some of our best search and rescue techs are females.
Now, are you talking as far as rescue techs or dog handlers or what? In what capacity are you?
And like I've got a number of females I am happy to go in the field with, and I don't worry about them being a weak
like your ground pounders, ground or pounder, Sartek 2s, whatever.
Why are you trying to put it in a box?
Simmer
down.
He's trying to put it in a box. What women are okay? The one that have the dogs.
No, we come from similar backgrounds. I'm trying to figure it out.
We'll talk about this later.
Yeah, but I wish our community could do more to really empower and encourage those women to stay on that, to not feel like you have to show more skin to get more views. Like, stay on your course.
Oh,
like,
amen.
Like, do what you're doing and stay on that course. And if you're not getting the likes, so what? It's going to be, you're going to get more out of that journey. And the people that do engage with you are going to be more authentic. And if you can be true to yourself and be more authentic, then it's just better for everybody.
Ultimately, it's your journey.
Exactly. It doesn't matter how many likes you have, how many followers you have. It's your journey.
Yeah. And that goes true. That's across the board.
Yeah,
man.
Absolutely. Would,
like, well, they may have the question Mel, what their motives are for doing it in the first place.
Get in there, Mel.
Well, I was going to say, like, when I left my previous career, which is wedding cake bakery owner and whatever, and found my new world of people in this bushcraft world through Instagram, found Georgia Bushcraft. And the one thing I was shocked about when I first came to my first gathering, and it was mostly male-dominated, which I expected it to be. I don't care. I most everything I've done has been male-dominated world. But nobody seemed to, like, have a problem with females coming in and trying to learn this stuff in this group of people. And I was just not used to that. And I so much appreciated it. I didn't see people with a chip on their shoulder and trying to show they were, like, you know, badasses or whatever. Like, they,
hey, it baby.
Was, you know, I was just so, like, welcomed. And
is
I
that
did
a buckskin
not...
bikini?
Well, it's good to know that the environment here isn't gender specific. It's right. just people learning.
Yeah.
That's it. Just people right. learning. And that's what's really great.
To
yeah.
welcome anybody who yeah. really wants to learn and is not here with an agenda to promote, you know, their
20-year-old bikini body.
Yeah.
Exactly. So I'm curious. I'm curious to hear Heather and Mel's hot take on this. Is do you feel slighted, or do you get that in your day-to-day stuff as far as people mansplaining or critiquing you because you're a woman? I'm just curious.
I don't get that. I got it more in the engineering field than I do in the bushcraft.
But not in this community.
No, not right. in this community. But this is pretty much my only community. I don't haven't really ventured out to, like, other areas of America to
have yeah, I think I think online people originally thought I was a man because I made outdoor gear. So a lot of people referred to me as sir when they first start talking to me. In person events, not this specific
how
events.
How could anybody ever, I'm sorry. I gotta stop. Yeah, right. How but could that ever happen?
I get mansplained to a lot yeah, in person, not at this particular event, but in other meetups we've gone to, people start talking to me like, and I just smile, just wait for them to stop.
Yeah.
You know, they just assume I know nothing. So yeah, I do. I do get some, you know, mansplaining. That's all I can say. A lot of it. You yeah. see it. Todd just laughs. Yeah. Just
like I
laughs.
Said to you when we had that earlier conversation, this is where I step back and go, oh, you cross yeah. that line.
But, he's going to get a sewing needle in the eye.
But, I mean, that's a certain kind of people. That's also the people that show up that are standing there like they're going to take on the world and tell you how to do everything. And they've got all that gear and they're so much smarter than not just me, but they're smarter than everybody there.
Yeah.
So, I mean, those kind of people do, but you know, you
do you think these are the guys that are trying to impress you, though, or do you think that they're
oh God,
they legitimately aren't mature
them.
Enough to
yeah.
see?
They're not worthy yeah, of that much.
Jumping to conclusions.
I'm told
they're...
I'm intimidating, so what? You know, I don't
no.
know.
No, girl, you're not intimidating.
Well, as a couple working on the
of course,
PNW Bushcraft,
made you mad yet?
And a lot so. Of times yeah. when in the outdoor. The first person they talk to is me.
All the time.
Yeah. And yeah. I have to sit there and step back and go, no, it's her.
Yeah. yeah.
Heather's the one that's doing the company. I mean, she's the one that's running it. And we've seen people get turned off by that. And
that's
literally
their
just,
loss, man.
You don't yeah. need them.
Yeah. yeah, exactly.
That's
yeah.
exactly
yeah.
our
they're
thought,
not
too.
Your customers.
They're not yeah. our customers. Yeah. But I've seen it personally, and I've just been like, yeah, well,
yeah.
you know, hopefully you get brick falls in your head.
He's such a good husband.
Really,
yeah.
You're never going to be your customer.
No.
I didn't
no.
really realize that. I mean, you just said something that resonated with me. Like, I never really would have thought, especially today, that that would still exist, if you will.
Really?
Yeah, like oh. that's kind of almost hard for me. I guess being in our community,
yeah,
I don't see a lot of
yeah.
that.
Yeah,
you know, usually we're all really quick to make good friendships. We're all in the same mindset.
Yeah.
We all have the same goals, and we're all growing together, et cetera.
Yeah.
But I guess, in especially in y'all's business, y'all do run into that.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I just
try to ignore it. I mean, it doesn't
really
do any
thought
good.
About it.
Yeah, but it, I mean, when you ask a specific question, you have to sit and think about it. Does it happen?
Right.
Yes, it does.
And it does happen.
And
does
I get
happen.
People that assume that I'm a male because Mel, M-E-L. M-E-L
where
of the
is
mountains.
This coming from? I would have never thought
yeah.
either one of you.
But I don't. It doesn't bother me because I'm
ever.
Used. Like I said, I've
well, they're not looking at us.
Yeah, I don't take
they
offense.
They don't assume
at
it by our appearances.
Right.
I know, but what are we talking about? Are you talking on the phone, on the computer,
email,
on
our
the,
email, talking yeah. online,
oh,
yes,
like,
online.
Okay,
yes.
so they're reading us.
So they're not talking to our voice. So
yeah.
they don't see our
yeah.
picture.
I've got
does
like
that explain
Silence
it
of the Lambs stuff going on in my head right now.
Again,
it's spiraling out of
control. No, so I just had one quick question, Mikey. Yes. What was it that you, what made this topic come to mind that you wanted everybody to talk about it? Did you have something specific?
No, it's nothing specific. It's just I have personal conversations with just about all of you at some point in time or another. And invariably, those conversations turn to the business side of bushcraft.
Yeah.
And those always come up with, oh, I've had this customer that said this, or this experience. And this is something that is almost universal among all of us at this table, is that we have all had that one experience where you're like, I just wish people would quit prying with their knives. Like, and Shane was brave enough to go out on Instagram and make that post. And I loved it. I thought it was the best thing ever. And I was
brave,
like,
or dumb?
I thought it was brave.
But, depends on who you're talking to.
Hey, if we really want to touch it off, you can say baton or not to baton.
Oh, Please don't start.
Yeah, I was going to ask MT. Yeah.
But this was, I thought this podcast was a great opportunity to get all of us here from broad spectrums of the bushcraft community. I mean, we've got everybody here from the primitive guys to the modern guys to the firearms to the gear producers and sellers. Everybody here is bringing something unique to the table, and I just wanted to get everybody together and give you an opportunity to speak your mind and just say those things that you don't get to say all the time.
One of the things I think on the other side of the microphone, the guys that are listening, when you say the word unpopular opinions, yes, we do get together as co-op members and business owners and say, hey, I had this situation come up. But there's also a side to that, even though it's unpopular and it makes our job hard and it makes us aggravated sometimes.
Sure.
That you really do. But it also, just like you learning that skill, being a new guy going into bushcraft, even though we've been doing this for X number of years, when we get that email that makes me sit down and rethink, why is this guy or this gal sending me this email? Mm-hmm. Is there something I need to look at that helps me get better? So even though it might be something that's unpopular per se in my mindset, it also makes me step back and ask questions about what I am doing. Can I get better at that thing, whatever it is? So when you're out there learning the bushcraft thing, instead of when you hit that brick wall and you have that unpopular thing or you don't like this instructor, you maybe sit back and go, man, what was this guy trying to tell me? What can I learn from that? What can make me better? Because it is a hard thing, and just like talking and batoning knives, I am not a fan. I'll be honest with you. I think there is a place when you should, and there's definitely a place when you should not. And I don't know that everyone can know where that line is.
Do you find that hard? I mean, as a manufacturer, do you find that hard to balance maybe your ethics, your belief system, et cetera, with trying to change with the times to give your audience what they want, your customers, rather what they want?
Sometimes it's hard to know what they want. They don't really know what they want as
well.
Maybe
they don't even know how to use it properly.
You are talking to the guy whose famous line is, I don't know what I want, but I know what I don't want.
Yes, and he's right about that.
Well, so, and we're drowned out by, there is no one consensus. It is a shotgun approach where people, like, the whole internet just threw up on you.
Right.
And there is no way to, you can't make heads or tails of it. So the short answer is no, we're not going to capitulate to every whim. We have to stay close to our core values. We have to ask ourselves at times, what is it we believe? Mm-hmm. And the clarifying part to that for us, and just like it is with you guys are just, LT Wright and the crew, you guys are always in the community. You're always in the dirt. You're spending time outside, and you're spending time in your environment with your clientele and your customers. That dirt time and that time with those people is clarifying, and it's why we continue to do it. We're a training company with a knife problem. That's what Mikey said about us. We were and always have been a training company first, and we make knives, but it's the training company that our products have to pass through for us to know whether or not we're okay with this.
Right.
And so if you just bend to the whim and
right, you don't want to do
then
that.
Then we lose our identity, we lose ourselves, and then you can't do it.
To a certain degree, I think a lot of those people, you know, haters or whatever, it makes us reassess who we are, and it ultimately makes us a better company as a whole. And I tend to welcome those kinds of things because I think it does make a difference. And, I mean, I said earlier, we're not the same knife company that we were in 2013. I mean, we're just not.
If you were, there'd be a problem.
Right. And I mean, we've grown, we've changed employees here and there, but the product that is coming out the door is 100% better than the product that it used to be before. And it's because of the fact that we are constantly pushing the boundaries of what we're capable of doing.
And some of that's because of the community. And maybe some of those unpopular bushcraft things that you speak of that get brought up from time to time. It makes us become better at what we do. And even instructors, you're going to get that one student that really made you earn your dollar that day.
Yes. Right?
You're going to have that.
There's
person.
Only one. He's going to wear
you out. But you're going to go home and you're going to go, man, that was hard. But did I explain it to the best of my ability? And that'll make you a better instructor.
Amen.
And some days I honestly wish we could just put Forged in front of our name so we could get away with a lot more stuff. That's another story.
So you know what's really great about listening to everyone talk is everyone here is talking about constantly learning and improving who they are as people. And I think that's what makes this community special is people are always trying to grow and they're willing to accept when things go wrong and that they can improve. And I think that's what makes this really different from a lot of groups of people is because this group is like, you know what? I don't know everything. I can always learn more and I can learn from the experiences. So,
and I truly believe that people are attracted to that.
Yeah.
When they see that, they see the connection, they see us as individuals and how we're growing as people. And I think that that literally attracts people into the community as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we're well over our time now.
Sorry. Well, thanks for having us.
But it was a great conversation.
No, it was pretty fun. I definitely enjoyed it. And before we get out of here, I want everybody to plug your stuff. Absolutely. Okay? Okay. This is what it's all about. It's about community. So give these people that are listening some gear to buy and some places to go and learn what they might want to be interested in and get their learning skills up.
Should I start at my end? All right. You're looking at me. Our company is P&W Bushcraft. You can find us online at pnwbushcraft.com. We make amazing wax canvas gear in our shop in Washington State.
Oh, me.
You're next.
Brian from Woods Monkey, woodsmonkey.com. We make the world's first modular friction folder and some other great gear. We also carry some great stuff from our friends at P&W. So check us out. We also have a fun Instagram page. I try to be a little bit fun with our page. We're the less serious side of the LT Wright family.
He's fluent in chimpanzee.
Demonstration?
I was getting a little ah, but now I can't because I'm laughing.
And every time he shows up at the shop, we make him tell a monkey joke.
A really, really,
really
bad
monkey joke. So.
Well, it's my turn.
Yeah.
Brandon Curran, also known on the social medias as Curran 1776. Company is BattleBox, BattleBox. There's no E. We don't know how to spell correctly.
Space right here.
Like I said earlier, I wasn't very good in school. So we send out survival gear, outdoor gear, general adventure gear, and things like that to you every single month in a monthly subscription box. We are gear people. We like to push the gear, but we want you to get outdoors and use the gear and have fun, learn skills, and be ready for when the time comes that you should be. You can find us on all the social medias, TikTok, YouTube, Instagram, all that. And I like to goof around and have a good time and have fun outdoors and encourage you to do the same. So go to those pages and have a like and laugh and pick on me and get in the comment section just like every freaking body else.
I'm one of those people.
Don't make me use this keyboard on you.
And I'll probably respond in some way. But
or you get an auto response.
Yeah, or auto response. You can check us out at battlebox.com, BattleBox.com.
The E is silent.
No E.
Yeah, I never knew that until now. That's crazy. I've been following you for a long time. I'm Melanie, Mel of the Mountains. That's melofthemountains.com. Also on Instagram and Facebook. And my specialty and passion is teaching people how to make buckskin from deer hides. And also how to make things with buckskins, like dresses, moccasins, whatnot. Yes.
I have a random question.
Yeah.
Is it still called buckskin if it's from a girl deer?
Yeah, absolutely. Because it's based on trading for a buck. Like,
dollar. Yeah, that's where the dollar actually came from, a buck.
I love trading today. A buck. There you go. Yeah, stick around. I'll teach you more things.
Sounds better than notes.
Well, that's true. It does. Yes, Mel, it does.
Mel, can you make it math? Because he's not real good at math.
Can I make what?
Make it math. He's not real good at math.
Oh,
4 out of 5 people say math is hard.
Oh, I thought it
was 5 out of 4. Oh, jeez. Oh, my gosh.
You can't even get that right. I told you.
Killing me. Also, if you want a buckskin bikini, I'm your gal. On to you, JJ.
Yeah, so, JJ Morris with Field of Fires, and I'm here not just to promote myself, but we're a co-op, so we're promoting people like Mel of the Mountains. We're promoting Todd Walker with the Survival Sherpa. We're basically a education company that specializes in self-reliance. So you can do everything from tanning someone's hide to bushcraft in the modern sense of the word. So check us out on TikTok and Instagram and YouTube and Facebook and all that stuff and whatever else is coming out in the future. So hope to see you all around the campfire soon. You can also go to www.fieldoffires.com to check on our classes and all the stuff that we had coming up. So
check out his videos. He's very funny, y'all.
No, not at all. What, not whatsoever.
Or if you're like me, you get stuck in the wazoo ass.
Yes!
Oh! Me too, Mikey. Me too. Yeah.
I watch Dan Bongino and I get JJ
Wazoo.
Do your
pants look like this?
Every day on Instagram. Your pants look like this?
You too.
I want to look at your pants, JJ.
Go to wazoogear.com today.
I'm sorry, Shane.
No, I'm good. I'm just waiting on y'all. Shane with SC Knives and Reynolds Adventuring Training, pretty much the same on the web and on Instagram and Facebook and YouTube.
And be sure to check out RatSar. They do some amazing things for a lot of people in the Southeast. So if you can,
RatSar.org. That's our nonprofit.
Cool.
Yep. And I would like to thank Casey for getting us all together down here at Demo Days at Georgia Bushcraft. How can they get a hold of this event, Michael?
Well,
they can.
Just come to the gatherings.
The Demo Days is an invitation-only event.
Spring and fall gatherings. Okay.
Georgia Bushcraft Spring and Fall Gatherings. GeorgiaBushcraft.com is the best way to check out what he's got going on.
And a large contingent of us will be back here at spring and fall.
And it's a life-changing event because that is how I got into all of this, was coming to a Georgia Bushcraft event.
That's how we all got
to be
around this.
And it has created a new career and a passion for me, so can change your life.
Yes. Well, I'd like to thank everyone for showing up tonight and hanging out this late and, this cold Georgia weather.
Outside this whole time.
We're going to have a great weekend. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. And this was great. This was
thanks
really
for the opportunity.
Well,
thank you.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Right. And thanks to those in Puerto Rico and those other countries that make us number one.
Portugal and the Netherlands.
Okay, and the top 25, please keep listening. We'd love to be like that. You should see it. Mikey comes into the office and he goes, "We are number 20 in Puerto Rico." Like, are you kidding me?
Awesome.
And that's all-time podcast. He's not just bushcraft.
All the time.
Watch out, Joe Rogan.
Bro, we're just excited to be sitting at the adult table.
It's a lot of
pauses or whatever we can talk about.
Thank you guys very much. Mikey, where can they find our podcast? One more time.
That would be anywhere you can find a podcast.
Right on. Every single time. Guys, thank you very much. Stay tuned for episode 32 of The Shack. Have a great day. God bless you.